C2 PR Number 7B.
Yes, we go on just there. Nor can the infinite do less than bestow all good. Again, if you read that, which synonymous term rings in you? Again, love. Love bestows all good. It cannot go for higher than that. You touch the highest. Since he is unchanging, see, since he is soul, he does not change. What does he not be able to change? He cannot change to give less than what he is giving. He cannot give less than all good. So you can't change that God not to be love. Not to be love who gives always all the good, bestows all good. Since he is unchanging, what? Wisdom and love. Wisdom, mind, love, naturally love. Now, can you hear that suddenly it seems as if we would get out of rhythm in the simple melody? The simple melody was mind as mind, the desire to know the allness of God, mind as spirit, that this desire will not return void, that it is substance, that it has its reward, and you come to mind as soul and say, and this God is unchanging, you can't change him. That would still be in the rhythm, and suddenly something comes in and says, you know, that God is love and mind. It's that God that is love that bestows all good and cannot be changed to bestow all good. You cannot make him not to give all good, because he is wisdom and love, because he knows that only the good is good. Now, can you hear that if we would not have seen the two scriptural notes in their place value, we would be irritated now? We would feel, Mrs. Eddy doesn't play the tune rightly. She doesn't really go on in the melody properly. But as we have seen, that the scriptural note 2 is all about love and mind. Love really manifesting itself always as the maximum of love, as the bestowing of good. She brings that in now. So you hear, besides the piano, which is the main tone, and the violin, that is the subtone, you hear now the trumpet suddenly come in and trumpeting, you know, I'm always that, but I can't be something else than what I am. I'm always bestowing all good, all good, all good. And then it stops again. That's as it is in an orchestra too, that trumpets. Doesn't trumpet all the way through. It accentuates something terrifically. It says, you know, that's all right to say God is unchanging. Yes, he's unchanging. The theologian would say, yes, he's unchanging. Sometimes he is good and sometimes bad, you know. That's his nature. That's his constant nature. He doesn't change that. You see, Mrs. Eddy has to bring in as early as possible to say, but that God that is all and that is unchanging, in which way is he unchanging? He is unchanging in that one way that is typical or characteristic for prayer, namely, what do we expect from prayer? That God gives us all the good. So she brings it in and says, this is the unchangeable nature of soul, that love never changes, bringing out the maximum of good. Can you see that? Yes? Can you hear those various instruments playing at once? Naturally, in the text, it comes one after the other, but we have, because Mrs. Eddy couldn't write the textbook as a score, nobody would have been able to read it. We could write it on the blackboard as a score. We could do that. So we have to see how what appears in the text as successive, to put it into the vertical. Say, this happens at once. The moment she says God is not moved by the breath of praise, he is unchanging, unchanging in what? And at the same time, not as a following on, but at the same time she says that unchanging means love and mind. Love always expressing itself, manifesting itself as mind, as the infinite good, as the bestowing of infinite good. Yes? Isn't it wonderful? But up to this point in this paragraph, we have not yet heard how it affects our attitude towards prayer. Tony has said now what God is, that God is unchanging. But we must find also a quality of our attitude of prayer, what that brings up within us. And so the next sentence says that. Line 11, we can do more for ourselves. Can you hear now how it is translated to us? What can we do more? What is our attitude that must be shown forth? Namely, by humble, fervent petitions. That's our attitude. What is that attitude? These are not just words that Mrs. Eddy somehow just flowed in her pen, and so she wrote it down. Can you see that this is a scriptural note one? It is petition, desire, it's fervent spirit, and it is humble soul. You have again the attitude that we said is going right through the whole chapter, the attitude of mind, spirit, soul. Naturally spelled out in grammar, grammar never follows spiritual order. That is another point of interpretation, that you must be aware that spiritual order does not coincide, to say coincide, is not isomorphic with grammatical order. Yeah? Remember, we had that, I explained that 2 years ago in Genesis. I don't know if you remember, with that sevenfold sequence right at the beginning of Genesis, that spiritual is a sevenfold order, but grammatically, grammar doesn't obey to that spiritual order, so it obeys English grammar, and therefore the terms do not appear in that order. If you take here humble, fervent petitions, then it seems to be in the order of soul, humble, fervent, spirit, petitions, mind, in the grammar. But spiritually, you can see that you cannot have that. The first important point is, what is the petition? What is the form of the petition? Not what is the form of humbleness. So, petition stands here at the end, though it is in the spiritual at the beginning. You start with a petition. And you say, how should that petition be? Well, it must have depth. Therefore, it must be fervent. And it should be selfless, namely humble soul. So, you also have to be aware that you are not just taking English grammar and see in English grammar the spiritual order. This cannot be done. You must think out what is the spiritual order. And English grammar puts it another way. Again, we can do more for ourselves. In which way? Now comes the whole scripture note one. By an attitude that is mind, spirit, soul. By a petition that is fervent and humble. But the all-loving, again, you have love coming in, but the all-loving does not grant them simply on the ground of lip service. And see the superficial prayer of lip service. For he already knows all. Again, mind. And you see, the second time she comes in and says, what is love and mind? The first time she says love and mind is really that wisdom and love which says that love bestows all good. And you can't help and you can't change that and you can't hinder that. That love's nature is to bestow all good. But the second time she comes in and says, and that all loving does not grant them on a superficial prayerful attitude, namely lip service. He only grants it on a good prayerful attitude of petitions, fervent and humble. Because he knows what is in your mind. He knows unspoken thought. Therefore, he already knows all. We can't fool love. We can't fool love. We can't say, well, we mean it fervently when it is not fervent. Love and mind shows that love knows what is in your heart. Love knows what is your attitude. You can't fool it by lip service, by showing forth anything that is not real and true within you. The side note there is deity unchangeable. So again, you have as a main tone there that God is soul, is unchangeable. And then the trumpet comes in and says, and that unchangeability is that it always gives you all good. But don't think you can fool love. Love cannot be fooled. Knows everything because love is mind. Your Father knows what you need. And therefore we're not granted if it's a prayer of lip service. Yes. Did we get that right? Yes? So, at least from this paragraph, which is rather clear, you can see how in one paragraph you can have soul and love and mind. Yes? You have three different synonyms, and the reader who does not know how to structure the subject says, well, it's all there, you know. Doesn't really matter what you talk about as long as you talk about God. And the other one who is critical towards us and says, you people always say there is an order and that the subject is built up in mind, spirit, soul. You can see it here in the passage of soul that she doesn't talk about soul. She talks about love and she talks about mind. Can you see? And we would say, yes, yes. But I have a whole orchestra. I don't have just a mouth organ. Mouth organ. I just can play one tone melody. How would you say a one tone melody or a one voice melody? Yeah. Thank God you always know what I mean, even if I say it wrongly. Yeah. Okay. We had here as an epitome. This requires the humility to change ourselves. That's our attitude. Huh? Because God doesn't change, well, she says, then we jolly well have to change. So we have to the humility to change ourselves. So you can see these epitomes are built up on the human attitude of prayer, not on the response of prayer. The epitome is always try to be consistent, not to change standpoints. We are here always taking the question, what is true prayer? And not what is the answer to true prayer. The answer to true prayer is always love and mind, so to say. Whereas the standpoint is, all right, if God doesn't change, we jolly well have to change. We come to the next one of principle. Prayer cannot change. And your spiritual ear says at once, soul doesn't change. But you see something beautiful. Very often, Mrs. Eddy, when she develops a subject and she has finished a paragraph, has finished a subject, and wants to go on to the next subject, that she picks it up where the preceding subject left it. She builds bridges. She doesn't make these always these sharp cuts. So having said that God does not change, and that therefore we cannot change God, that we better change ourselves. So now she starts again and says, prayer cannot change. What? Now comes the main thing. Now comes the object, what cannot be changed. Namely, the science of being. So she introduces at once that really the object of prayer is the science of being. Not the religious concept of God, but that she has reduced really God to a science of being. And the moment we hear that, the science of being, something rings within us and says, this is principle. So we cannot change what? We cannot change the science of being, the science of God. But what does prayer do? But it tends to bring us into harmony with it. When you hear that, what does it ring? Principle. To bring us into harmony with the principle. That's the attitude that we gain. So that at once it says it does not bring us to the oldness of mind or to the substance of spirit or to the unchangeability of soul. Now it brings us into principle, into the science of being, into the harmony of being. You have at once such nice tone of principle. Again, you see, it says, what then on earth is prayer? Again, is prayer something where you pray about little things? Where you pray that you will be enlightened about this case and that case and the other thing? It says, no, it must be much bigger. It must always be the all. It must be the whole science of being. That is the object of our prayer. It must bring us into the science of being. Therefore we see at once where the religious sense of prayer goes wrong, because the religious sense of prayer always wants to bring us into harmony with single things, with single situations, not with the whole of being. And this goes right through. The moment, can you see that? The tendency in the human mind is to get into unity with the harmony of little things, isolated things, into harmony with what just happens within my life. And prayer always takes that away and says, no, your object must be God. Your object must not be tiny little things. Your whole heart must go out to understand the whole and not little things. It's not training at gnats and swallowing camels. We really must go after the camels. We must find the camels, those big things, not these gnats that just irritate one always, because there are thousands and thousands of problems that come along constantly. The day is full, the month is full of little gnats, and the year is full of all those gnats, and they irritate us endlessly. And so one of the big things in prayer is to go out to the whole. First we had the whole mind. Mind knows already all. Then came spirit, that spirit really is not void, that it is the righteousness of everything. That in soul doesn't change, cannot change the allness of love. And here in principle it says, it brings us to the all of science, to the science of being. This is really irritating in Christian science, in the general view, that Christian scientists are after gnats and not after camels. You know, the camels for me are those great categories of being. They stand very firm on those four legs. Usually the littleness, the narrowness of the human mind chases after little things, never after big things. I always felt right from the beginning, I said, if I can have the bigger, I take the bigger than the smaller. Perhaps a bit not quite selfless. But why not think about the whole instead about the parts? The whole always includes the parts anyway. We don't have to worry about that one. We never lose little things if we go after the big things. Never. Because the big includes the little. The whole includes the parts. All right. So that brings us into harmony with the science of being. Goodness attains the demonstration of truth. A request, again a prayer, a request that God will save us is not all that is required. So I wonder what is required. And she says, the mere habit of pleading. She gives now the wrong sense of prayer. The mere habit of pleading with the divine mind, as one pleads with a human being. And you see, she now contrasts the science of being with the human being. They contrast the principle of being with the personal sense of being, a human being. That if we plead with the divine mind as if it were a human being, if we degrade, so to say, principle to a personal concept, this perpetuates the belief in God as humanly circumscribed. Can you see what is humanly circumscribed? It's again the counterfeit of principle. Principle is infinite, it's not human, it's not humanly circumscribed. The counterfeit of it is that we consider God as an anthropomorphic God, just a suprahuman being, just much bigger than an ordinary mortal. And that is a false sense of principle. An error which impedes spiritual growth. So she brings out here that the wrong attitude of prayer, petitioning God to do all sorts of things, but petitioning God as if he were a human being, humanly circumscribed, then we hinder spiritual growth. Our epitome was that such a prayer, as shown before, brings us into harmony with the science of being. Well, perhaps we'll read the first four now consecutively, the first four epitomes, then you'll see the flow of it much easier. So, mind as mind starts out. Now, the question above it is, what is involved in a true desire? See, we have the prayer of mind is the prayer of true desire. And the subtones should give us an answer what this means to have a true desire. So I put first the question there, what is involved in a true desire? Do you know where I am? Yes? So the answer is through mind. We must be willing to let our desire first be molded by mind, so that our desire is no more our desire, but that our desire is actually mind's own desire. If that desire is that way, then it is a pure motive of prayer, finds their reward. So it says, if you have a right desire, that desire is pure, when it is molded by mind, then you can be quite sure that it is substantial, that it has a reward. You don't have to doubt that. Well, this requires something. We come to soul. This requires the humility to change ourselves. We have to adapt ourselves to that attitude of mind and spirit. Then we have that humility, then we have to change ourselves, or our desires, or our attitude. And if we have done mind, spirit, soul, and have changed our attitude, then principle comes and says, yes, such a prayer of mind, spirit, soul brings us actually into harmony with signs of being. Can you see the order? I'm so sorry. You are not allowed to say no. Yeah. No, I think slowly you get the rhythm, huh?